shades of chaos and bent to examine the hearth. As was common in hostelries, the hearth had been constructed in a ring of stone and mortar in the middle of the room, set upon a slab of limestone thick enough to keep the heat from the hearth from endangering the wood-plank floor. Neither the hearth nor the slab beneath it showed any sign of being willing to move, whether to slide aside or lift or fall, despite Kratos's best efforts. The chopping and hammering of axes against the heavy door suddenly doubled in speed and impact. The orange glow from fires outside began to glimmer through splintery holes, and Kratos knew he had only seconds to either uncover the trapdoor or prepare to make a stand. Kratos looked again about the room, muttering through his teeth, "Zeus! Zeus! Show me your wisdom!" "I am with you, Kratos." Kratos's head jerked up, and he spun around. Had that been a voice in his ears, or only in his mind? He did not take time to ask or investigate further, for he now noticed a detail of the huge statue that previously had escaped his hasty scan. Chains dangled from the statue's wrists, chains very much like Kratos's own. Now Kratos saw the smoothly finished cracks where wide and welcoming arms joined the god's mighty shoulders, as though these shoulders might have joints not unlike those of a man. Kratos leaped to the top of the altar and sprang again. He caught one chain and swung across the statue's front to grab the other, then bunched the knotted muscles of his arms and his back to pull both chains simultaneously. He understood then why the woman had not taken her infant down through the trapdoor. These arms could not have been moved without three or four men using the chains to pull each one. Three or four men, or one ghost of Sparta. The arms swiveled down so that the welcoming hands came together, palms up, the fingers pointing at the hearth behind Kratos, the hearth that now had lifted straight up from the floor. Supported by heavy vertical timbers, it revealed a dark opening below. From the continuing tension on the chains he held, Kratos knew the hearth door would slam shut as soon as he let go, but Kratos had outsmarted similar devices in the past. He braced his feet against the thighs of the marble Zeus and strained outward with all his might. In the instant that he released the chains, he drove out into a hurtling dive as the hearth slab crashed down like a boulder from a cliff. He went headfirst into the hole, the falling slab barely clipping the heels of his sandals. He landed hard on damp stone in the blackness and cast a wary glance at the slab above. Not the faintest glimmer of light showed through any crack. Unless the Minotaurs were a great deal smarter than he gave them credit for, or more driven to find him than was likely, they'd never figure out how he had escaped. But that didn't mean he had time to waste congratulating himself. The Oracle still waited. Kratos stood, then fell to his knees as dizziness assailed him. His lungs burned anew, and his blistered back again delivered constant pain. He needed time to heal, to mend his wounds, and there would be no time to pause. Above, he heard the chipping of axes against Zeus's statue. The Minotaurs might be unable to open the way into the underground passage, but they had somehow figured out where he had gone, and worked to follow as best they could by destroying the statue. Kratos brushed his hand over his face, then laughed harshly. The Minotaurs did not need to be smart to follow him. All they needed to do was follow the trail of the Cyclops's blood he'd left behind. He was still covered in gore. His footsteps had led the Minotaurs to the statue of Zeus. His bloody handprints on the chains showed what he had done to escape. They would be after him in scant minutes. He tried to stand, but his legs failed him. He sat again, still panting from exertion, from exhaustion. Welling up from deep within the hard core that was his heart came resolve. He was Spartan. Ares had used him. Kratos screamed as the visions rushed back to him. The temple, the old woman and those within, the woman and child within, and he had... With a mighty surge, Kratos got to his feet, using the wall as support. He closed his eyes and turned slowly in the darkness until he felt a faint puff of air against his face. Without opening his eyes, he walked hesitantly into that air current. Only after he had gone several dozen paces without bumping into a wall did he bother to open his eyes. Vision now dark-adapted, he quickly spotted a tiny glow at the far end of a narrow, low tunnel. He walked steadily toward the light, wary of a trap along the way. If he had been the builder of this escape tunnel, he would have dug a pit to cause the unwary intruder to break a leg. If the builder had been more ambitious, there might be tripwires, swinging hammers, or other perils that the innkeepers and guests would know to avoid, leaving unpleasant surprises for any pursuers. The light grew brighter, bigger, more inviting, and he'd encountered no traps. He walked faster. He was almost running when someone called his name.
Kratos!
He thought that Ares had found the tunnel and had come for him in person. Swords held in a shaky grip, he turned the tips toward a tiny glowing spot in the darkness.
Show yourself. We can have it out here and now.
His muscles quivered from fatigue, but if he finally faced his ultimate enemy, he would die like a Spartan. The sudden burst of light forced him to throw up an arm to shield his eyes. Squinting, he saw a massively muscled man step forward out of a shimmer in the air, like a sun dog in the brilliant blue of a summer sky. The gray shot curls of storm clouds that served him for hair and beard would have instantly told Kratos who this was, even if Kratos hadn't leaped off a statue of him only moments before.
"My Lord Zeus," Kratos bowed. "I am surprised. I had thought you might be Ares. That particular son of mine is still on the other side of Athens, enjoying his rampage," Zeus said.
Kratos couldn't tell from Zeus's tone whether the Sky Father approved or disapproved of Ares's onslaught. He decided not to ask.
"How may I serve the King of the Gods?" "Kratos, you grow stronger as your journey continues, but if you are to succeed in your quest, you will need my aid." "What is your will, Lord Zeus?" "I bring you the power of the greatest of all the gods, the father of Olympus. I give you the power of Zeus."
The king of Olympus reached out and said,
"Give me your hands, son."
Kratos let the blades of chaos slip back into their sheaths. The brilliance pouring into the tunnel at once warmed him and threatened to burn the flesh off his bones. Kratos lifted his arms to the ruler of the gods.
"Take my weapon, Kratos," cried Zeus. "Take my power and destroy your enemies."
The tunnel roof opened and revealed bright blue sky dotted with clouds. A lightning bolt seared down a jagged path and exploded against Kratos's outstretched hands. He recoiled. It felt as if he'd plunged his hands into a cauldron of molten iron. He pulled back his hands and stared in astonishment at his unburned skin, astonishment arising mostly from the burned meat smoke that rose from them. Now seared into the palm of his right hand was a tiny jagged white scar that blazed with the light of the sun.
"Your thunderbolt?"
He looked up. But the portal where the god had emerged had already closed. Above there was no longer blue sky and billowing white clouds. All he saw was dirt with roots growing down through it. He had not left the escape tunnel. But the scar on his right palm proved almost too brilliant for him to examine. Kratos reached back over his right shoulder, as though drawing back his arm to throw a javelin. He grunted in surprise when a solid bolt of lightning manifested in his hand. He hurled it forward, and it lanced along the tunnel quicker than he'd thought. The detonation caused the far end of the tunnel to begin collapsing, opening a sliver of night sky above the Acropolis. Kratos set out toward it, but again he heard a voice, with his ears or with his mind he could not say.
"Go back and fight!"
Kratos stopped, still weak from his earlier conflict.
"But the Oracle! Destroy another 300 monsters, and she'll be there when you arrive."
Kratos was sick of sneaking around underground, feeling like a mewling babe and almost too weak to stand. Once more he reached back, and again when he threw his hand forward, a blast of lightning flashed the length of the tunnel. This one destroyed the timbers that supported the hearth slab, and the whole thing dropped and shattered, scattering the tunnel's floor with burning embers. He nodded to himself. Using the thunderbolt buoyed his spirits, and erased some of the weakness in his muscles. Being so near a godlike power rejuvenated him. Time to go back and see exactly how well this thunderbolt worked against a real enemy. 12. Slaughtering the minions of Ares outside the inn proved to be more fun than Kratos had anticipated. When Zeus gave him the power of the thunderbolt, apparently he'd also refilled that general magical reservoir. Poseidon's rage crackled more deadly than ever before, and Medusa's gaze turned monsters to stone by the dozen, and Zeus's thunderbolt shattered a mob of petrified monsters in a very satisfactory fashion. Best of all, the flood of potent magic through his palm when he used the thunderbolt healed his wounds. Stretching and turning failed to cause the slightest discomfort on his back, where the touch of Ares's fire had so sorely injured him. After a few throws of the thunderbolt, Ares's minions had fled, giving Kratos a chance to bathe in a fountain and clean some of the Cyclops's gore from his body. When he'd finished his ablutions, he felt certain he could take on and triumph over the worst that Ares had to offer. He found a particular sequence to be most effective. He'd leap into the midst of a crowd of monsters and call on Poseidon's rage, then whip out the Gorgon's head and turn them all to stone, because they would be too stunned from Poseidon's rage to avert their eyes. Then he would hurtle into the midst of another squad of the undead legionnaires, fire a thunderbolt back at where he'd come from, and while the petrified monsters were raining down in pieces, he would once again fire Poseidon's rage against the fresh meat around him. He became adept enough with Medusa's gaze to petrify swooping harpies as they passed, turning them into the equivalent of sharp-edged catapult stones that could mow down a half-dozen undead at one blow. And he found that the bronze armor of the undead legionnaires had an interesting property when struck with Zeus's thunderbolt. If other similarly clad undead were near enough, the thunderbolt would arc from monster to monster, popping them off in a pleasingly swift succession like chestnuts tossed into a bonfire. Kratos stood appreciating his handiwork when the clack of hooves against the cobblestones alerted him to approaching centaurs. He turned, thinking he would face only one. A herd of the half-horse, half-man creatures trotted into the plaza and quickly arrayed themselves against him. Somehow one had managed to come up behind when his attention was diverted by the main herd. Powerful hands lifted him off the ground and held him high. He saw the sky and struggled to draw a weapon, any weapon. In a flash, Kratos realized he was unable to fight like this. He kicked his feet up high and rolled backward, breaking the centaur's grip. The man-horse cried out in rage as Kratos landed on the creature's rump, legs dangling down on either side of the equine body. "You are the one Lord Ares seeks!" The centaur swung half about and tried to land a fist on the side of Kratos's head. The Spartan ducked easily, shrugged his shoulders, and brought forth a loop of the chain fused to the bone of his forearms. He didn't draw the blades of chaos. He snapped the chain holding the pommel to his flesh about in an iron garrote. Kratos rocked back, strangling the centaur. The creature tried in vain to pry loose the chain wrapped about its throat. It went to its haunches and reared, hoping to throw off Kratos. The ghost of Sparta clung to the chain as if it were a bridle and reins, rather than a strangling weapon. He scooted forward, came closer to the man-part of the monster, and kicked hard so his heels drove into the centaur's belly. As the creature galloped forward, Kratos guided it to the spot among the others in the herd that he desired most. At the last possible instant, he released the chain and raised his right hand. The star brand burned furiously, then released Zeus's thunderbolt. Kratos aimed not at the centaur's bodies, but at the ground where they stood. Suddenly molten ground beneath their hooves caused them to rear and crash into one another. Not satisfied, Kratos loosed another thunderbolt, this time directed at their horseshoes. As with the bronze armor worn by the undead legionnaires, the metallic horseshoes sparked and blazed, burning upward until not a centaur in the herd commanded a full four legs. Several had lost all four legs up to the fetlocks. None was able to fight. Kratos kicked free of the centaur he rode, but before he could draw the blades of chaos to dispatch it, the creature raced away, leaving behind only a high-pitched keening of stark fear. Kratos realized, as much as he appreciated the stark power of Zeus's gift, he had to press on to find the oracle. He lost track of how many monsters he had destroyed. When finally no more came to assault him, the roadway was paved with corpses three deep in all directions. He didn't bother to count. Despite Zeus's assurance, he felt time pressing down upon him. Kratos ran up the incline of the roadway, falling into an easy lope. As he ran, his mind cast forth, considering different courses of action. But most of all, his mind always returned to the oracle and her mysterious secret of how a mortal might murder a god. He was so lost in thought that, as he rounded a turn in the path, he ran smack into an undead legionnaire. They collided, Kratos rebounded, and the armored skeleton warrior crashed to the ground. The clatter of its bones against its sword and shield when it fell echoed through the Acropolis. Kratos recovered more swiftly than the skeleton warrior, drew the blades of chaos, and scissored off the undead skull. Kratos laughed. None stood against the ghost of Sparta. And when he saw a dozen legionnaires coming down the path to investigate the noise, he laughed even more. These undead legionnaires were well-armored and impressively weaponed. Hollow, disturbingly evil eye sockets glared like embers in a darkened room through bronze helmets decorated with black feathers. They carried bucklers studded with brass nails. A few swung scythes, but most were armed with swords, and they marched in a tight, disciplined formation, with more pressing in at their backs. And a single thunderbolt blew them all to pieces. The ravening blast radiated outward, zigzagging on its way like lightning from Mount Olympus itself. The leading trio of legionnaires exploded, as did the next rank, and the next, and the next. Kratos gingerly stepped over the smoldering bones and burned parts blasted from the legionnaires' bodies. Beside the path lay a bronze helmet, the black feathers smoking, as was the skull strapped inside. Melted swords and sundered helmets lay scattered along the path. Kratos stared in wonder at the white scar on his palm. Then he hurriedly turned the palm away. Should he accidentally trigger a thunderbolt while he stared at his own hand, his death might be both swift and humiliating. Once more he fell into the distance-devouring lope that was his habitual pace up the increasingly steep path. In places pilgrims had painstakingly carved steps from the rock for the weaker supplicants. As if in a dream, he no longer climbed the Acropolis of Athens toward the Parthenon, but instead some winding mountain path thousands of feet in the air. It became more difficult to breathe, and his legs, those tireless legs that tramped 50 miles in a day, began to ache from exertion. He came to a bridge spanning a deep gorge ahead of him. Along the bridge marched 50 or more Athenians, all bearing large wicker offering baskets and going to Athena's temple. He understood now how the oracle's temple had withstood the assaults of the god of war. It wasn't in the Parthenon at all, but was at the summit of some magically concealed path, which could be seen and trodden only by the faithful. As he hurried toward the bridge, a shrill whistling filled the air. He looked up and saw a fireball descending from the heavens, and it occurred to him that even if he could not see the path or the temple, Ares could apparently still see him. The Spartan dove and rolled aside. The clinging, burning fire never touched him this time, but it splashed across the bridge. Dozens of supplicants screamed. Some leaped from the bridge to plummet hundreds of feet to the rocks below, blazing like small suns as they tumbled downward. Those on the bridge, struck directly by the Greek fire, were now encased in charcoal shrouds that had once been their skin. He heard soul-curdling screams from them, hideously burned, trapped in their sooty sheaths. Each second of life was an eternity of agony. But someone took pity on them, Athena, or perhaps Zeus himself, for with a grinding, squealing shriek of bronze on stone, the bridge dropped, and the burning Athenians were granted death upon the rocks far below. Kratos rushed around a final turn in the path and stared across the chasm. From his glimpse before, he thought Ares's fireballs had destroyed the bridge. Instead, more than half the bridge survived. But it was tilting upward into the air, away from Kratos, cranked by an enormous winch on the far side of the chasm. A short, powerful man struggled with the handle to lock it in place.
"Stop!" Kratos shouted. "Lower the bridge! I must reach the temple!"
"Go away!" the bridgekeeper shouted back. "The monsters prowl everywhere. Whole companies mount the path behind you. If you love the goddess, you'll help me destroy the bridge."
"I serve Athena. She has tasked me with finding her oracle. Lower the bridge!"
Kratos took a step forward, to the very brink of the chasm.
"Even if I do, a third of it has been destroyed. How will you cross the gap? If you can fly, what do you need the bridge for?"
"Lower the bridge," Kratos growled. "I won't ask again."
"I will die for the goddess."
"Fine."
Kratos reached back over his right shoulder, filling his hand with solid lightning. The bridgekeeper squinted across the chasm.
"Hey now, hey," he said uncertainly. "What's that in your hand?"
"See for yourself."
The thunderbolt shot from his hand and blasted to flinders the platform where the man stood. The bridgekeeper's scream echoed through the gorge, even after his broken body splattered across the rocks below. Argument with the bridgekeeper at an end, Kratos was still left with the problem of crossing the chasm. Kratos scowled at the winch. He could certainly use a tame harpy right about now, or even an owl. If Athena really wanted him to reach her oracle, she could at least share a couple of her sacred birds. Neither friendly harpies nor Olympian owls made any sudden appearance. Kratos reached back for another thunderbolt. He let fly at the winch, blasting it to scrap. The huge chains shrieked as the drawbridge swung down. The crash, as it fell back into place, finally erased the echoes of the bridgekeeper's death. Kratos paused to judge the remaining gap. 25 or 30 feet, no more, but a misjudgment of distance spelled his death on the rocks below. He took a couple of steps for momentum and hurled himself into the air. As he sailed toward the wreckage at the near end of the bridge, another whistle from the sky rose to a scream. He caught at the end of the bridge, fingers clutching at splinters of wood and stone, and swung himself into a rising back flip that carried him into the somewhat more solid structure a bit farther in. He looked up toward the rising scream and saw another ball of Greek fire hurtling from the sky directly at him. Even if he survived the fire, it would certainly destroy the bridge. Kratos had no desire to follow the bridgekeeper down and add his body to the gory pile below. Acting rather than consciously deciding, he loosed another thunderbolt from his hand, slicing the night to meet the fireball. The detonation splattered the fireball in all directions. Kratos spun to avert his face as bits of the tarry fire rained down on him. The last things he needed on his face were more scars. Some caught on the flooring of the bridge and sizzled to life upon the new fuel of the bridge's span. He leaped for the other side, sprinting to outrace the sizzling flame, but before he could reach the safety of the rocky outcropping, he felt the structure shift under his weight, shudder, then collapse. Kratos scrambled up the burning planks as though they were a ladder, barely reaching the rocky path before the bridge came apart and tumbled into the chasm. Kratos stared back across the rocky gap for one brief moment. At least the bridgekeeper should be smiling up from Hades. No monster would cross that chasm unless it could fly. He turned and moved on. The steep path became stairs that led straight to the top of the mountain. At the summit towered a vast, many-tiered structure, 3 or 4 times the size of the Parthenon below, and 10 times its height, all of elegantly constructed marble leafed in the purest gold. As he climbed the stairs, sounds of battle came from above. He straightened and drew his blades. Slow passage through the air caused the blades of chaos to hiss and trail sparks. Kratos took the steps into the temple swiftly and silently, moving as stealthily as he could, until he found the source of the clank of sword on sword. A large devotional area in the center of the temple was spattered with fresh blood. Two soldiers staggered from behind the statue of Athena that towered over the far side of the chamber, trying desperately to hold off the attacks of five or six undead heavy infantry. Kratos nodded to himself. Of course, as soon as the god of war had located the temple, his foul Hades spawn had begun to appear. Even here, within the holiest sanctum of the goddess. He cat-footed across the open area and cut the legs of four undead from under them before the creatures knew he was there. A few quick slices settled the others. One soldier was down, bleeding out the last of his life on the goddess's pristine floor. The other Athenian cast one grim nod of thanks toward Kratos, then let out a war cry and charged back behind Athena's statue. His head rolled out an instant later. Kratos reluctantly admitted to himself that maybe not all Athenians were cowards. The monster that had just sent the valiant soldier to Hades rounded the statue and came at him. Another undead legionnaire, but this one towered taller than a minotaur, was clad in impenetrable armor, and both its arms terminated in death scythes instead of hands. The banefires within its empty eye sockets fixed on Kratos as if issuing a silent challenge to combat. The hideous monster attacked with a speed that caught Kratos by surprise. Barely turning aside the wickedly sharp blade, Kratos gave ground and got to the center of the temple where he could fight unhindered. The legionnaire rushed him and lost a leg. As it fell past, Kratos delivered a second cut that took off both the legionnaire's hands. The death scythes clattered across the floor. Kratos looked at the struggling monster, then swung his sword a final time. The head rolled after the scythes. For all its fierce aspect, the legionnaire had proven to be no great opponent.
"Aid me!" came a new shout from behind the statue. "To my side, if you love Athena!"
A third Athenian soldier fought a pair of legionnaires by himself, fighting on, though weakened from a dozen cuts, some deep, and at least one likely mortal. Kratos added his strong arm to the fight. Brave Athenians were rare enough that he felt he should contribute to this one's survival. He pressed the legionnaires back and saw why the Athenian soldiers had been engaged behind the statue. There a hidden door had been broken to shards, opening a narrow corridor that led, Kratos surmised, to the oracle's quarters. These legionnaires were no more challenged than had been their larger brother. Kratos wove a curtain of death about them, pressing in for the kill, and the world exploded around him. A fireball burst on the temple roof and burned through, laying it open to the sky above. A great gobbet of the Greek fire fell fully upon the Athenian and killed him instantly. The undead this brave spirit had dueled also returned to Hades in a flash of eye-searing combustion. Even the legionnaire Kratos fought perished, as a fist-sized glob of fire splashed upon his helm and burned down until nothing remained above the bony shoulders but a puddle of molten bronze. The armor Kratos had looted from his victims also blazed with dozens of droplets of fire. A quick flourish of the blades of chaos sliced away his improvised bindings, and the armor dropped to the floor, where it was swiftly consumed. Kratos never even looked back. He stepped over the Athenian smoldering corpse and entered the narrow corridor.
"I am Kratos of Sparta," he called. "The goddess commands me to speak with her oracle."
The ghostly woman who had come to him in Athens now appeared in the flesh, and her beauty stole away his voice. The translucent strips of green silk she wore as a skirt beguiled, moving to hide and then reveal her legs and thighs and hips. Wrapped around her bodice, the diaphanous cloth clung with static fierceness to every delicate curve.
"You came," the oracle breathed. Her voice soothed and aroused simultaneously.
I had begun to doubt you ever would.
The temple is not safe, he said. Ares' dark spawn hunt within.
The oracle closed her eyes. Then her heavy breasts lifted and fell with a deep, melancholy sigh. My other defenders have perished. May their souls find nothing but joy as they join their beloveds upon the Elysian fields. The Spartan thought this unlikely, but held his tongue. Only you remain, Kratos. Her eyes, like pools of moonlight, opened and fixed upon Kratos, and for a moment the Spartan could not remember even the battle around him. You are all I have left. He shook himself back to the present.
And I am all you need. Hurry.
He looked around the small room where the oracle lived, only a bed and a few personal items. She led an unsophisticated, innocent existence, free of vanity or guile. But the chamber itself was a tactical nightmare. If Ares's minions came upon them in this room, the low ceiling and closed-in walls would hinder the use of the Blades of Chaos, and to unleash any of the god's powerful magic in such an area might well be suicidal. Worse, the corridor leading to the temple was the only exit from the room. Sufficient force at the entry would catch them like flies in a bottle.
We must speak together, you and I, the oracle said, indicating a three-legged stool beside her bed. Sit, and I will tell you what you need to know.
Why did not Athena tell me everything I need to know to kill Ares?
The oracle made a dismissive motion to silence him, and said, I will reveal what I have seen. Sometimes my vision is precise, other times it is as if I am looking through a veil, or perhaps it is better described as a shroud. A distant expression changed her from anxious to ethereal. Kratos saw the power of her talent. Or was it a curse? Reveal to me our secrets hidden to the gods, the oracle said. For as far-reaching as their wisdom is, there are some things to which even they are not privy. Kratos felt exposed under her unwavering gaze, which focused not upon him, but seemingly on something beyond, something through him. The visions fill my every waking moment, my every dreaming instant, telling me what you must do. Her voice dropped to hardly more than a whisper. I know how to kill a god. All too familiar screeching that echoed among the temple's columns brought Kratos around, his blades ready for action.
This room is a trap. Ares wants you dead. Move, and I'll keep you alive.
He raced back to the temple and skidded around Athena's statue. Other than the corpses and blood splattered on the floor, the room stretched empty and quiet. He looked up to the sundered ceiling and found a reeking swarm of harpies. He headed out to more open ground, where he could meet them with all his force. A harpy screeched and hurtled down at him like an attacking eagle. He stabbed upward and drove the point of his sword into the hideous monster's breast. Blood exploded and blasted into his eyes, but he still dismembered the monster with but a flick of his wrist. He slashed at the air as he blinked hard to clear his eyes. More screeching harpies swarmed around him. His blades met monstrous flesh more than once, but their talons tore at his skin from all sides. When he finally wiped the harpy gore from his eyes, he saw injured harpies scuttling along the temple floor. Ichor continued to stream from their wounds as they used their leathery wings to drag themselves along. When one saw him watching, she screeched at him again, and they all clacked jagged teeth in a fierce challenge. Kratos took one last swipe across his eyes, then moved in for the kill.
Kratos!
Terror in the oracle's voice brought Kratos whirling back toward the statue of Athena. Two harpies held the oracle in their filthy talons. He leaped for them, blades at the ready. He had seen too well how swiftly even a single harpy could slaughter a mortal. The haunting memory of the child being dashed against Athenian cobblestones caused bile to rise. But they seemed to have some other plan for their captive. They beat at the air with their wings, wrenching the woman from the ground. Powerful claws sank into the oracle's shoulders. The harpy screeched with evil glee and took wing, the oracle dangling from their punishing talons.
"Kratos!" she called, her voice going faint from despair. "Kratos, save me!"
Kratos leaped with all his might, but another harpy had timed his spring and slammed down onto his back like a falcon taking a rabbit. He spun with a snarl, and a single cut with the blades of chaos took one wing and the top of its head. Not yet understanding it had been mortally wounded, the screeching monster raked at him furiously with her claws. A second flurry from the blade sent those claws to the empty floor, lacking the arms to which they had been attached. But even that single second of distraction had proven too costly. Before he could gather himself to spring again, the harpies carrying the oracle flapped powerfully and disappeared through the hole blasted in the temple roof, and all their sisters followed. Kratos watched helplessly as the creatures and their prey disappeared into the murky clouds of night. Alone in the temple, Kratos turned to the blank-faced statue of Athena and spread his hands. He did not pray to the gods. He cursed them. Then he formed a plan to rescue the oracle. 13. Inspiration from the goddess did not appear to be forthcoming. Kratos would have to come up with a plan of his own, as usual. He peered through the smoldering gap in the temple ceiling, trying to catch sight of the harpies and the oracle. No luck. He ran outside and circled the temple, thinking furiously. How could he rescue the holy woman if he did find her aloft? Zeus's thunderbolt would fry the oracle along with the harpies. Medusa's gaze might work, but using it would involve being in a position to catch the oracle as she fell. The probability that she might be falling attached to a pair of solid stone harpies, or that she might be turned to stone herself, did not increase the plan's attraction. To use Poseidon's rage, he'd have to practically catch the fleeing she-raptors with his own hands, and if he got his hands on them, he'd hardly need magic to do what needed to be done. A bow, he thought, wistfully remembering the fine, strong bow he'd been given by the dying Athenian at the gap in the long wall. A bow and two arrows. Two would be all he'd need, to injure, to weaken, to shoot from the sky. Desperately searching the sky, he was slow to register a scraping sound at the side of the temple. Kratos rounded the side of the building and saw a freshly dug grave. He drew back as a flurry of dirt sailed from the hole. He advanced cautiously, unsure what was happening. When a hand appeared over the rocky edge, Kratos spun and drew the blades of chaos, instantly ready for a fight. Grunting, mumbling to himself, an elderly man in ragged, filthy clothing dragged his withered carcass up to the grave's edge. He blinked at Kratos with age-dimmed eyes, then tossed a shovel onto the ground near the pile of dirt and placed his hands flat, trying to pull himself out. He failed.
"You gonna help an old man or just stand there gawking?"
Kratos could only stare. How could any mortal, let alone an ancient man, have dug a grave in such rocky ground?
"Come on," the old man snapped. "What, the ghost of Sparta is afraid of me? Can't you see I'm older than the dust from a titan's beard?"
Kratos released the blades and took the man's hand. The old fellow seemed not to weigh anything at all.
"You know me?" "Course I do. You have the blades. The skin as pale as the moon. You are the one, indeed. Perhaps Athens will survive at that."
The gravedigger laughed.
"But be careful. Don't want you dying before I'm done with this grave."
"A grave?
In the middle of a battle? Who will occupy it, old man?"
"You will, my son."
The gravedigger looked Kratos over, from his sandals to the top of his shaved head.
"Oh, I've got a lot of digging to do, indeed. All will be revealed in good time. And when all appears to be lost, Kratos, I will be there to help."
"The oracle," Kratos said. "Have you seen her? She was taken by harpies."
Oh, sure enough, I saw her.
The grave digger picked up his shovel and stabbed its blade into the earth beside the grave with surprising energy.
Many a thing I could tell you about her, if I had half a mind, he said.
If the desiccated old coot did have half a mind, this conversation would already be over.
All I need to know is where they're taking her.
The ancient gravedigger turned toward the ghost of Sparta, and all suggestion of senility drained from his voice. His eyes burned with the fires of Athens below.
Well, where do you think the harpies would be taking her?
The old man said scornfully.
Don't you know the first thing about harpies?
I know how to kill them.
That's the last thing about harpies, boy. First thing is, they like to eat where they kill. Second thing is, they roost up high.
The ancient gravedigger threw back his head, laughing, while Kratos stared, anger growing. Then the old man fell silent, turned, and looked upward to the sundered temple roof. Kratos heard the screech of a harpy and the scream of a woman in pain. Blades found his hands, and Kratos charged back into the temple. His sandal slipped on a pool of blood, and he skidded across the floor, one knee sliding through gore on the cold marble. High above the temple floor, only a level or two below the topmost reach of the temple, the harpies appeared to be having some kind of disagreement, as though one of them wanted to carry the oracle off to some secure dining area where they could enjoy themselves without the fear of being rudely interrupted by the blades of chaos, while the other seemed to have decided to forego the formalities and just eat the oracle here. The oracle fought back with all her human strength and will, hammering at the monsters with her fists and prying at the powerful talons sunk into her shoulders. As the harpies fought back and forth, the oracle's blood trailed down her breasts and flanks and dripped from the ends of her toes. Her struggles began to weaken. Kratos dropped the blades and let them return to their sheaths on his back. His only weapon effective at this range was the thunderbolt, which would fry all three of them when it hit, unless he missed. It seemed unlikely. On the other hand, it might be worth his trouble to just go ahead and miss after all, but in a useful fashion. Again he gathered solid lightning in his right hand, and he cast the bolt a span or two high, close enough that it startled both harpies, then struck the balcony just above them. The thunderbolt blasted out huge chunks of white marble that slammed down into the harpies, who seemingly decided that this particular meal was turning out to be more dangerous than they'd anticipated. They stifled their squabble, let go of the oracle, and beat their wings as hard as they could, angling for cover. A swift appraisal of the rate of the oracle's fall told Kratos he had time for one last shot, and lightning from below blew both harpies into smoking gobbets of flesh. Kratos sprinted toward the spot where the oracle would strike the temple floor, trusting to save her. But she didn't land.
Help me!
The oracle hung from a hawser, dangling from a crane affixed to the temple's roof. Ares's barrage of Greek fire, or perhaps Kratos's own lightning, had broken something loose. The oracle clung for her life hundreds of feet above the temple courtyard. Worse, the hawsers swung erratically and threatened to send her over the side of the mountain, down past that sheer cliff. Kratos knew if she fell that way, all his strength would count for nothing. He scanned the temple courtyard for any way to get close to her. He saw a structure of rickety timbers that might allow him to cross an upper tier.
"Kratos, save me! You must hurry!"
she screamed from high above. This rescue needed to be accomplished now. He reversed the blades of chaos to an underhand dagger-style grip, then leaped as high as his mighty thighs could propel him up the legs of the marble statue. The same qualities of workability that made marble the choice for statues now made it the choice for a ladder. With strike after strike, the blades of chaos chopped into the marble, driving deep enough that Kratos could use them as pythons to haul himself ever higher. When he withdrew the blades to chop again, the chipped-out gaps left by the blades made admirable footholds. In this fashion he scaled the vast statue, reaching the goddess's serving tray in only seconds.
"Kratos, I can't hold on!"
"You won't have to,"
Kratos said, as he took three steps for momentum, then hurled himself through the air from the very edge of the tray. He stretched out and out, and at the last instant the hawser swung back toward him. He struck the oracle with his shoulder as though tackling an opponent in a pancraton free-for-all. This broke her grip on the hawser and let them fall free. With one arm around the oracle's slim waist, he grabbed at another rope with his free hand. His fingers touched the rough rope, closed, and for a moment he thought they were safe. Then the rope began playing out over a pulley above. Kratos grunted, twisted, and snapped the rope hard, sending a shock upward that dislodged the rope from the pulley. The fall stopped suddenly as the rope fouled on a hook, and Kratos and the oracle swung back and forth like a pendulum. Loosening his grip, Kratos slid down the static rope to stand on the temple floor once more. He released the oracle, who looked at him intently.
"Kratos, as Athena herself has foretold, but you are late, perhaps too late, to save Athens."
She moved closer, until her face was only inches from his. She reached up and took his head in her hands, one palm pressed warmly into each of his temples. Kratos tried to pull away, but her grip was surprisingly strong, and his strength surprisingly lacking.
"Or is it Athens you have come to save?"
Kratos cried out.
"No! I..."
He jerked to free himself, screwing shut his eyes and trying to step backward, but it was too late. Her power spread irresistibly through his mind. Needles danced across his brain, pricking ever faster and causing discomfort that built into abject pain. His head felt as if it would explode at any instant, and when he opened his eyes, he was elsewhere. He sat astride a horse, a sword gripped in his hand and held high over his head, exhorting his troops upon the bloody field of battle against the barbarians.
"Rally to me, men of Sparta! Though we are only 50, we will fight like 1,000! Kill them! Kill them all! No quarter, no prisoners, no mercy!"
His breath gusted like fire from his nostrils, and his heart hammered like Hephaestus's forge. The stench of blood and death filled him to bursting. 1,000 deaths this day would belong to him and him alone. He led the charge at the head of 1,000 Spartans as they rushed into battle on his command. He was a hero now, a legend. Spartans vied among themselves for the honor of serving the legendary Kratos. As his victories mounted, their numbers swelled. He carried 2 swords into battle. When the first dulled from hacking through the bone and flesh of his enemies, he discarded it in favor of the second, which served him through another 12 or 100 opponents until it too dulled. Then he gathered weapons dropped by the dead or fleeing enemy so that the carnage would never slow, let alone stop. His valiant soldiers looked to him for guidance, the kind of guidance a legendary commander could offer. He gave them the lessons he himself had learned. He showed them how to kill.
"No quarter, no prisoners, no mercy."
The warring became nothing more than a stage on which Kratos played. He killed for the god of war. He killed for the glory of Sparta. He killed for the sheer joy of watching men die under his sword. All feared him, ally and enemy alike, except one, his calm and patient wife, who seemed the only mortal with the courage to stand against his fury.
"How much is enough, Kratos? When will it end?"
"When the glory of Sparta is known throughout the world."
She made a gesture, as if shooing away an annoying insect.
"The glory of Sparta," she said, with scalding mockery. "What does that even mean? Do you know, or are you just mouthing the excuses you tell yourself to justify your bloodlust?"
She gathered their daughter against her skirts, and the flash of anger vanished, replaced by a resigned melancholy.
"You do not fight for Sparta. These things you do only for yourself."
Before Kratos could respond, he saw his wife change, grow older, and her eyes began to shed bloody tears. tears that caught fire as they ran down her cheeks. Where they fell, a wall of fire sprang up between Kratos and his wife, exactly like the flames kindled by his own men to drive the enemy before them and to hear the lamentations of their women. The flames blinded him and seared his flesh. But his wife, she was on the other side. The other side of... Athena's oracle pulled her hands off his temples and looked at him, her face bloodless. By the gods, why would Athena send one such as you? Kratos took her by the throat with one mighty hand.
Stay out of my head.
For an instant, a need to snap that pretty neck shook him like an unfurled banner. His head rang with memories of war trumpets and the screams of terror and despair. He cast her aside, and she fell to the temple floor. She sat and rocked back on her hands, staring up at him. Then she stood and faced the ghost of Sparta, unafraid. Choose your enemies wisely, Kratos. She turned from him and walked toward a section of the temple wall where he made out the faint outline of a door. The wall beside it was marked with an insignia where the oracle stopped. Your brute strength alone will not be enough to destroy Ares. She leaned against the insignia, causing the wall to fade away and the door to open. Only one item in the world will allow you to defeat a god. Kratos squinted at the bright light pouring through the portal. It intensified until he had to use one enormous arm to shield his eyes. Heat boiled toward him as he stood near an open furnace. What lay beyond confused him. This door should lead out onto the rocky, night-shrouded cliffs surrounding the temple. But through the portal, as his eyes began to adjust, he saw noontide and swirling sands. If the oracle found this in any way unusual or disturbing, she gave no sign. Pandora's box lies far beyond the walls of Athens, hidden by the gods across the desert to the east, she said with calm assurance. Only with its power can you defeat Ares. She stepped aside and turned her unreadable eyes on him once more. Kratos feared no man, no god, but he shied away from Athena's oracle. She had entered the hidden realm in his mind and witnessed his shame. Be warned, Kratos. Many have gone in search of Pandora's box. None has returned. She pointed to the portal. Go through the gates to the desert, Kratos. There begins the path to Pandora's box. It is the only way you will defeat Ares and save Athens. The only way, Kratos. The only way. Her voice faded to a whisper, hardly audible over the whistling desert wind. Kratos ran forth from the temple, skirting the ramparts of the sacred mountain for a few minutes. Then before him loomed a crumbling gate, attended only by a vast statue of a hoplite. He pressed on through the gate without pausing. A strong wind whipped up a storm that cut at his face like tiny razors, and when he turned back for a last look at Athens, the city was gone. There was nothing to be seen in any direction save an eternity of sand. He was alone, more alone than he had ever been in his life. 14. So little left. Would you care to wager on how long before your city will be rebuilt in honor of Ares? Hermes fluttered above the reflecting pool, breeze from his winged sandals rippling the water and blurring the view of Athens's destruction. He bent down and poked a finger into the liquid and disturbed the image just under the surface. A heretofore undamaged building fell into rubble at his touch. "Stop that," Athena said sharply. "Why? I would say Ares is the clear victor here," the messenger of the gods said, smiling broadly. "Do you think that building would have survived his assault? He has left you nothing, and now he reduces that nothing to... even less." Zeus appeared, thunder rolling from his sudden entrance.
Hands tucked into his toga, he frowned at Hermes, appearing wroth.
"He's done better than I expected. Ares usually blunders about like a minotaur in a potter's shop."
"Better than you expected?" Athena said pointedly. "Have you chosen to support my brother?"
"No," Zeus said, looking angrier yet. "He destroys too many of my shrines. It is almost as if he picks them out, but I must be wrong. It is your worshippers he kills, Athena."
Athena could only glower.
"Ah, Lord and Father," said Hermes cheerfully, "you have won handsomely in this business so far, haven't you?"
Athena looked sharply at Hermes.
"What do you mean by that?"
Zeus's voice thundered, and lightning sizzled his beard.
"Is Kratos not your creature?" Hermes asked, fluttering up and away, seeming a little frightened.
He looked to Athena for support, but she had none to give. She worried that Hermes understood Kratos's true quest into the desert of lost souls, and would tell Ares, simply to relieve himself of boredom by stirring more trouble.
"He is Athena's pet, not mine," Zeus said.
"Yes, of course. I was wrong to assume you were aiding him, though someone in Athens uses a thunderbolt similar to your own against Ares's creatures. Do you know that, or is it only another of your whispered calumnies to set one god against another?" Athena asked. "You accuse me, of inciting civil war in Olympus? Never."
Hermes turned his attention back to Zeus.
"I am your loyal subject and son, Sky Father. I seek to harm no one, but only to keep all informed."
"And amused," Zeus said. "You would go to any length to avoid boredom."
Hermes nodded, smiled, then caught himself. He fluttered higher so he could bow deeply while hovering above the scrying pool. More somber, he bowed his head and swept his arm through the air as he said,
"My loyalty is without bounds, my king. You need only command me."
"Very well," Zeus said, grating his teeth. "Go to Ares and tell him I order him to cease his destruction of my temples and supplicants."
"Ares?"
Hermes looked so distraught that Athena fought to keep from laughing. Then she realized the gravity of the situation. Ares would never accede to Zeus's wishes, and if anything would redouble his effort to snuff out not only her followers, but the Sky Fathers as well.
"My father, there is no need for Hermes to interrupt Ares. The god of war is only pursuing his true nature."
Athena's gray eyes met the storm-filled ones of Zeus. She did not flinch. If Zeus sent this message, Hermes would become curious and would undoubtedly discover that Kratos sought Pandora's box. She knew the messenger of the gods well. He would never be able to restrain himself from slyly hinting to Ares that he knew something the god of war did not, and Ares would take only moments to learn all that she wanted kept secret from him.
"Pandora's box," Athena thought in wonder. "Kratos must find it, before Ares realizes there is danger in the quest."
Zeus's words startled Athena and relieved Hermes.
"You need not deliver the message to Ares," Zeus said.
"How may I be of aid in other ways, my father?" Hermes almost babbled in his respite from delivering such a challenge. The messenger of the gods usually enjoyed such discord, being above the content of the news.
With Ares willing to slay anyone, though, even the messenger would be at risk, in violation of Zeus's decree against one god killing another.
"Father," Athena said, choosing her words carefully, "the mortals bear the brunt of my brother's rage. If Hermes were to warn our priests and priestesses, telling them the best avenues of escape, they could save themselves."
"Well, get to work on it, then," Zeus said. "I would see this conflict at an end."
Zeus grumbled some more, stroking his beard, then looked hard at Athena.
"You're not goading your brother into destroying my shrines as a way to humiliate me, are you, daughter?"
"Father, no. I would never add to the destruction in my city."
"Even to save your pet mortal?"
"Kratos is nothing to me," Athena said, forcing herself to remain as calm as possible. If she dared not provoke Ares into hunting Kratos, neither did she want Zeus spying on him. She had no idea how the king of the gods would respond to a mortal killing not only a god, but Ares, his son.
"Begone," Zeus said, in a booming voice to Hermes.
Hermes took a single pass around the chamber for airspeed, then his winged sandals carried him high into the clouds around Olympus.
"Thought he'd never leave," Zeus said, lowering himself gratefully onto his throne.
When he regarded the goddess of wisdom, the noble gravity of authority shadowed his eyes.
"I wouldn't say this in front of Hermes. You know how he gossips. But I am growing concerned for you, Athena. Ares has delivered a surprisingly thorough destruction. Within a week or two, you may not have any worshippers left."
"It's been difficult," she admitted. "He's won the battle, but I always knew he would. I can still win the war." She watched her father for any hint that he would aid her.
"Can you?" Zeus asked, a bit sadly. "I have great faith in your powers, my daughter, but so far you haven't even hit back."
If she admitted to doing nothing, Zeus would become suspicious, since this would be unlike her. His concern for her rang true and brought her to an audacious confession. She had worried that her father would hinder Kratos when he found that there was a way for a mortal to destroy a god. But perhaps he would remain neutral, if not aid her valiant hero. It was a risk, but one she had to take to prevent unwanted interference. "That's about to change." Athena squinted at the chariot of Helios, where it hung in Olympus's everlasting summer moon. "If everything has gone as planned, my oracle in Athens has just now opened the portal to the Desert of Lost Souls and sent Kratos through."
"What does Kratos seek?"
Athena again paused, wary of her father's power and his possible opposition. Then certainty settled upon her like a cloak. She told him of the object of Kratos's search, revealed through the divination of the oracle. Zeus sat up straighter, his voice caught.
"The box?"
"Yes, father," she said with grim satisfaction. "Pandora's box." 15. Lost in the blinding sand, Kratos had no idea where to go. His eyes watered so hard that he might have been swimming in the sea were it not for the grit in his mouth and the way the dust filled his nose. Kratos put his head down and slogged forward. He was keenly aware that there were an infinite number of wrong directions and only one right one. He hoped. He could not know if there even was a right direction to walk. The oracle had summoned the visions that haunted his nightmares. The revulsion at what she had seen in his head had been writ plain upon her lovely face. He found it all too easy to imagine that she might have decided a man as corrupt and evil as he knew himself to be was best taken forever from the company of humankind. She might have sent him to this terrible desert to die. Worse, she might have sent him to this terrible desert to not die. He had heard tales of the punishments of the Titans in Tartarus. This endless desert, endless slash of sand, endless heat and endless thirst seemed all too similar to such tales. He cursed the gods as he trudged along, then added their oracles. If there had chanced to be a rift in the sandstorm through which he could glimpse the sun, he might have gauged the passage of time, or at least he might have discovered whether time did indeed pass in this awful waste, or if this had become his eternal fate. As it was, all he knew was growing heat and the ever-present wind laden with blinding sand. Above the howl of the wind came a shrill keening. He reached for the blades but did not draw. Slowly turning, he aimed himself toward the sound and advanced warily. Ares could lay 100 traps in such a storm. Worse, Kratos knew he might be lured away from his true destination. The only hope he had was to get a fix on the sound and find what it might be.
The sound was the first hint he'd had of anything other than his own sorry soul trudging through the storm. A bright light flashed once, twice, then shone to rival the sun. His stride lengthened. Whatever lay ahead had to be better than stumbling blindly through the desert. As he neared, he saw that the twin beacons were eyes in a statue of Athena.
"Athena," he said angrily, staring into the goddess's gray eyes.
He felt abandoned, and she was only the most recent of the Olympian pantheon to use and then discard him.
"Why have you brought me here?"
The statue spoke. "Kratos, the journey forward is perilous, but one you must complete if you are to have any hope of saving Athens."
"The oracle spoke of Pandora's box. Can it be real?"
"The box exists. It is the most powerful weapon a mortal can wield."
"Can I defeat Ares with it?"
"With the box, many things become possible. And so it is hidden well, far across the desert of lost souls." For a brief instant, the clouds of roiling sand cleared, and Kratos saw to the horizon. As quickly as the window opened, it closed. "There is safe passage through deadly sand, but only those who hear the siren's song will discover it, for only the sirens can guide you to Kronos, the Titan. Zeus has commanded him to wander the desert endlessly with the temple of Pandora chained to his back, until the swirling sands rip the very flesh from his bones."
"How do I find him?"
"Stay true to the song of the siren, Kratos. Your journey begins here. Pray it leads you back to Athens with Pandora's box. Remember this. Seek the summit, for only death awaits you below. There is no escape without the box."
"How do I resist the siren's song?" he asked.
Athena's statue did not answer. He moved closer and saw the eyes were featureless orbs of marble. The spirit of the goddess had left, and had left him. He held down his rising wrath.
"Hints! Nothing but hints."
He gritted his teeth and trudged on. It was not given to mortals to understand the whys and wherefores of the gods. That was what his mother used to tell him, back before he turned 7 and was taken from her to begin his training. He had always assumed that it meant nothing more or less than hush and do as you're told. As he set forth, he saw that the statue had changed. Now the right arm was raised, pointing into the desert. As he turned to follow that direction, he heard the faint keening once more. He stood a little straighter against the wind. Now he knew that sound to be